My guest today has coached over 2,000 women and helped them successfully step up into leadership roles. She has identified two things that hold women back the most and stop them from progressing in their career and stop them from stepping up into leadership roles. This episode today is absolutely incredible. If you are sat there and you are wanting to get ahead in your career, if you are wanting to identify things that could be holding you back, if you are wanting to learn and grow and come away feeling inspired, then this episode today is an absolute must listen. I sit down with Anne Burns, who has worked in the corporate world for over 25 years at Accenture. She's now got her own business, Triumph and Adversity. She's on the board for charities such as Fitted for Work. This woman is incredible. And she has come on the podcast today to share her wisdom, to share her knowledge. So please listen carefully to what she's got to say, because if you do, I know you are going to benefit greatly. So enjoy today's episode. Let me know what your biggest takeaway was. And I can't wait for you to listen today. Let's dive in. Anne, thank you so much for coming on the Career Confidence Podcast today. I'm really excited to have this honest, vulnerable, straight talking conversation that I know it's going to be. So before we dive in to all the juice that we're going to be talking about today, can you give a bit of an intro into your background, who you are, and your career journey? So Anne, over to you.
Great. Well, first and foremost, thank you, Georgie. I knew we were going to do this. I was really looking forward to it. So it's great to be here. I am a Brummie. And a Brummie is somebody from Birmingham in the UK. When I was 26, I escaped looking for adventure and came to Australia. And I spent 26 years with the great company called Accenture, where I was one of the managing directors there. And I had a weird and wonderful and fabulous career there, which I no doubt we'll talk about. But after 26 years of working for that New York Stock Exchange listed entity, I decided to scratch that little itch that I had, this insatiable curiosity I had for women leaders. And I'd always been a member of Chief Executive Women, and they asked me to help them develop their programs for them. And of course, that was the marriage that came together so wonderfully. Because I am fascinated by how leaders evolve. But I think sometimes we just don't get good advice. You know, you're sent on a program or you're asked to go and do this opportunity to make you more well-rounded, or you're given a list of endless problems and areas for improvement and weaknesses. You know, all that just doesn't help. It just feeds the imposter syndrome. And so for me, after 26 years, I decided to retire and set up my own business. And now I do leadership development. I do advisory work around inclusion and diversity. And I also do executive coaching. And I only do what I love, which is a very nice position to be in. My career journey from 26, a little Brummie arriving with two suitcases, getting off the plane and walking across the Sydney Harbour Bridge to my hotel. I remember thinking, I ain't going back. This is where I'm going to stay. And I've now been here 30 years, 30 years. And it's definitely been the lucky country for me. I've had opportunities here that I never would have had in the UK. So for me, I am an English-born, proud Australian.
I love that. And when we first met, Anne, I think we had that similar story of, because I arrived in Australia 12 years ago now with a rucksack. And I agree. When I arrived, I was like, this is where I'm supposed to be. I had this feeling of like, I'm meant to be here. And like you, this has been a wonderful country. I think it's full of opportunity. And I am very, very grateful to call myself a citizen now as well. So our stories began very similar. But I didn't go into a big corporate. I started in recruitment. You started in Accenture. Can you talk us through, because that is quite the career journey, like that you, and you've constantly got yourself promoted and worked your way up in that organization. So this is where I think a lot of people, especially women that listen to this podcast, get themselves stuck. Like they want to take those next steps, but they don't have the roadmap. They don't know how to get from A to B. So could you talk us through your journey with Accenture, the lessons that you learned through that, and also just some things that you came up against, perhaps as a woman in that sort of arena as well, in that big corporate?
Yeah, sure. I loved my time at Accenture. It was an opportunity to join a company. It was Anderson Consulting when I joined. So it was pre-IPO and just after their divorce with Arthur Anderson. So it was a time of great growth and optimism, and I thrived. I joined the strategy practice. When I applied for the job, I didn't actually realize it was in Sydney. I thought it was in London, and then they sent me a plane ticket. So I was like, oh, we'll give that a go and see what happens. My dad said to me at the time, you can't leave. They'll all call you Sheila and it'll be terrible. And, you know, you don't like the beach and you don't like the sea and you don't like the sun. So what are you doing? But the call of Accenture, it was a wonderful time preparing for the IPO, and the strategy practice grew and grew and grew. What was great about Accenture was very entrepreneurial in those days. And so we just tried all sorts of things, loads of different clients, lots of big adventures. And when I joined, it was about 70,000 people. And today, I think it's close to 780,000. So in the case of Accenture, you know, big is definitely bold and big is definitely beautiful. And I think on reflection, my career was one of great adventures. And it was in five chapters. The first chapter was me just learning my craft, like what does a strategy consultant do? And being very structured and disciplined about learning that craft. You know, if you're an engineer, you learn engineering. I went to university, I was an architect, so I knew a lot about dealing with clients and the disciplines of that. And if you're in technology, you have to know about the latest technology. So chapter one was me learning my craft and getting really good at it. Chapter two was finding the right person to work with. So as ever, there are people you like at work and there are people you don't like at work and vice versa. And so finding the right person to work, it was quite tricky to do that. But I was very fortunate that I found two. One that would take me everywhere with him to board meetings. And given I was like 26, 27 at the time, that was wonderful. He had faith in me. And the other was just naughty and would break all the rules. So I had this kind of good cop, bad cop in my career as I was figuring out who to work for and why. So I learned a lot from both of those gentlemen. One was more of a gentleman than the other one, a bit rough and ready. But they taught me a great deal and they were very generous to me in teaching me. Chapter three then was figuring out, okay, what do I want to be famous for? And building a reputation and having a narrative about what I was good at and telling everybody all of the time what I was good at and putting myself forward for things that I thought would be interesting. Chapter four was when I became a senior leader. And then all of a sudden, you are responsible and fully accountable and embracing that. And that was the first time really I'd had full control over P&L. It was very confronting, but it was quite brilliant in terms of the decisions you could make, the trust that people gave you, and the targets. I like a target. I was inspired to kind of do better. And so that fourth chapter of suddenly being in charge was good for me, was good for me. And the fifth chapter, which is where I ended up, where I was basically running, firstly, all of Asia Pacific for the utility sector, the sexy gas, water, and electricity industry and the energy transition. If you haven't heard about that, it's a very sexy industry. And then eventually was running all of the resources portfolio for Australia and New Zealand, and that was across energy, utilities, and mining. And that was at a point where sustainability was just beginning to become a thing. And so we talked a lot about triple zero, zero loss, zero harm, zero waste. And that was where my career, the fifth chapter, that chapter, yes, I was running a major P&L, but I was also managing all of the people below me and all of the contracts that were involving people from overseas. So it was a very complicated, very rewarding contribution to the overall business. And I loved every minute of it.
I just absolutely love how you've broken it down into chapters I think that's absolutely fantastic. I've not heard anyone do that before. There's actually a few things that really stand out to me here, Anne. The first one is you learnt your craft.
Yeah.
You built up your knowledge bucket. I think a lot of people that I'm speaking with that want to step up into a leadership role, they haven't done this first. Because when you step up into a leadership role, often what people think is, why should I listen to you?
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter about your age, but what I do think it matters is about your experience. Is there some truth in that, do you think? Because I'm quite fascinated by this.
Absolutely. And I think for me, you do have to learn your craft. You got to know what you're doing. You don't have to do everything, but you got to know what you're doing and know enough what you're doing that people can trust you. And I think when you've done that a few times, you get more experience. And I personally think you learn more from your failures than you do from your successes. I like to call that flerning. I think you learn a lot more when you flern than when everything is kind of glittering and fabulous and, you know, you go from success to success. Actually, when you make mistakes and you have perception of failure, you learn a great deal. And the scars that you have in your working life, hopefully they're not painful scars, but that's what makes you interesting. And the stories you can tell about your experience are the ones that really intrigue people. And people, when they trust you to go work for them or provide them a service of some description, trust is fundamental. So that combination of learning your craft and building your relationship based on trust comes from experience. And so in those early years, getting as much experience as I could possibly get and taking, literally eating risk for breakfast. I mean, some of the ridiculous things I did. 2011, Fukushima had just happened and everybody said, don't go to Japan. Of course, I'd already booked my flight. I was out there by myself. I'd never been. And I get there and there was eight lads. They were young men. And that was the team. And yet all the lights were out in Japan. And we had to work for almost 4 years to help the local companies there get the power back on, do the deregulation of the market, put all the smart infrastructure out there so that these accidents would never happen again. It was a huge risk. And it was probably one of the best adventures of my career. But I did see it as that. It was an adventure. It was an opportunity to take some risk. And that team of eight then became our biggest practice across the globe. And to this day, that team in Japan are exceptional. And they took a big risk with me. I mean, they'd never met anybody like me. And they took a big risk, you know, when I would push them to say, well, let's go and see the CEO. And they would respectfully say, well, we've never met the CEO. And I was like, great, let's go and see the CEO. So they had to trust me and vice versa. But some of those risks, my goodness me, when I look back now, that was the good stuff because you just didn't know what was going to happen. You just didn't know if you're going to be able to do it. And I like the ambiguity of that. And I do eat risks for breakfast, lunch and dinner.
Do you think that you were born with that? Do you think that came quite naturally? Or do you think that you were able to take those risks? Because you also mentioned you had quite a few sponsors within the business, quite a few people that clearly believed in you and took you under their wing. Do you think that helped you take those risks? Was it sort of a blend of both, feeling like you were confident enough to take the risk, but also knew you had the backing of people?
That's a great question. One, I'm from Birmingham. And so, you know, I don't know if you know many Brummies, but we just jump in and we get on with it. You know, we don't really see any of the risks. That's just, I think there's something in the water in Birmingham. Two, I did have a bit of a safety net there because I had good sponsors. And even when they left the business, you know, I would look for sponsors, not mentors. I had a mentor outside of work, but I had good sponsors in work. And the reason for that was I wanted to have personal conversations with my mentor that I probably didn't want to have discussed at work. So I treated my sponsors at work as sponsors that would back me, but I had a mentor and a coach outside of work. And so when I get myself in these sticky positions, which happened quite a lot in my career, I had two sides of each story. I could go and talk to my mentor, or indeed I could go and talk to my sponsors. And so I felt like I had this safety net for me to do interesting and experimental things. You know, another perfect example is we opened a global innovation center in Perth for mining. And it was quite controversial at the time. It was a fantastic idea. And it brought all of the global assets and thought leadership into Perth. And even better, all of the great stuff we'd done in Australia out to the rest of the world. Now, that was quite a big risk to take. You know, who opens an innovation center just before COVID? We didn't know COVID was coming. But when COVID came, we immediately pivoted into a virtual situation and hybrid working. And so that was a big risk that I was able to take because I knew I had the backing of myself, frankly, but also there were a number of people that believed in what we were doing. And I wouldn't say it was always a case of you don't take risks if you haven't got the safety there. But I think I had a number of people that I could trust for their opinion, both at work and outside of work.
And I think that's a really valuable lesson for people listening to this that are in a position where they're sort of, you know, sponsoring other people and encouraging like people to step up is that you've got to give people the trust to go and take those risks because look at what you've achieved by taking those risks. And had you not had the support there, you wouldn't have achieved what you'd achieved during that time. So I think your story is a really good lesson for leaders and businesses to make sure that you are giving the trust in your people and you're letting them go off and take some risks and maybe make a couple of failures because that's how we learn. That's how we innovate. And that's how we're going to create great businesses and companies. So I think that's a really, really important point that you've made. But I want to talk about, you mentioned as well, you built up your reputation in the business. I think this is absolutely key. This is all tied into like being visible, making people aware of what you do. How did you go about building up your reputation when you're working at Accenture?
Great. I might just touch on what you just touched on briefly, because I do believe that innovation is the other side of failure. Like I really believe that. And I think we wouldn't have any innovation if we didn't experiment and take risks. So we don't want to take blind risks, but I think having that mindset of actually taking risks leads to innovation. And in my case, a great deal of adventure, quite a lot of fun. So why not? What's the worst that could happen? You know, let's just see what happens, which is another thing that I love about Australia. You know, let's just give it a go. And so I've thrived in that kind of cultural environment and the optimism of Australia. And then the point about brand and personal brand, I mean, it's not necessarily the words you use. It's the feeling that you create in other people. So what is the feeling you create when you walk in the room? What is the feeling you create when you leave a room? That feeling is the manifestation of your brand. And there are all sorts of amazing people who can help with that development of your brand. I mean, my three words that I use all the time are wise, bold, and fearless. Those are my three words. They're connected to my values. And I come back all the time in everything that I do to wise, bold, and fearless. And if I'm not one of those three, I kind of say to myself, well, hang on a minute, am I being true to my personal brand? And so that journey for me started a very long time ago. You know, I'd say yes to everything. You know, there'd be some mad job somewhere, I'd say yes. I'd go to India, I'd go to Japan, I'd go to China, I'd go to Hong Kong. You know, I'd say yes to everything. And so people knew that I was happy to take risks. So that boldness was very clear. I didn't get the wisdom part of it until, you know, it's 30 years working. Wisdom comes with experience. So I wasn't necessarily wise in the early days. I knew stuff, but I wouldn't say I'd had enough experience. And the fearless stuff, I think that's just in me. That's just who I am. I don't have a fear of ambiguity. I don't have a fear of failure. And so those three words have really shaped my brand, my personal brand. I would say, though, that in women and the work that we do in leadership development, I see a lot of women with a loop, a negative narrative loop that runs in their head. And I think the negative narrative that we tell ourselves about ourselves is really holding us back. It's a massive problem. And if you listen to Taryn Brumfitt, you know, Australian of the Year, and she talks about body image and the amazing work she's doing with Embrace, she says, you should never say anything negative about your body. And I say, you should never say anything negative about yourself. And I think that narrative is incredibly important. What is my narrative? What is it that's interesting about me that I can tell other people? That is just so important for women leaders today. Because quite often, you know, people will introduce themselves as their name, rank, and serial number. You know, I'm a partner, I've been in the firm this many years, and this is my level, and this is what I do. Honestly, I'm kind of interested in what you do, but I'm more interested in what you have to say and who you do that work for and for what purpose. tell me something about yourself and have a narrative, whether you're meeting somebody at a drink social like the ones that you run, which are fabulous, or whether it's in the airport or whether it's in a client situation or a partner situation, have something interesting to say about yourself, but always make that positive.
That was so good. There was so much in that the first thing that you said about how you make people feel, so powerful. I think in a world where people are so quick to just want to say their opinion and talk more, how you make people feel, that's what you want to like leave people with, a feeling, you know, that is so, so powerful. I absolutely love that, Anne. And then I want to actually now move on into leadership, because this is one thing that I think we're both very passionate about. And I do think that a lot of people get put into leadership roles with no prior experience, with no support. And they're like, right, you're a great performer. You're going to be promoted into a leadership role. And they're like, oh, right. Okay. And all of a sudden they've got to manage this team. They've got to manage themselves. Like, so many people are set up to fail. So what's your experience been like stepping up into a leadership role? Can we learn some lessons there? And then let's move on to the coaching work that you've done through your business, which I want to go on to, with women.
Yeah, great. So you get the dream gig, you're now in charge. What do you do day one? Well, firstly, I think you have to learn the art of composure. And you think about the women leaders we see on television, that we hear in the media. By the way, 72% of voices we hear in the media are male. So when we do see women, look at them, study them. Have they got composure? And composure is so important as a leader, because if you can't keep calm in situations of extreme pressure, or your body language, or your what we lovingly refer to as our resting bitch face, if that gives this away, you're going to really struggle. You're going to really struggle in situations of extreme pressure. So having composure and learning how to communicate with your non-verbal body language, incredibly important. And I think the more senior you get, this word comes up over and over and over again with women, which is executive presence, or what we call gravitas. Oh, you can't have that CEO role, or we can't put you on the board because you don't have gravitas. And I got sick and tired of listening to that. So decided to basically define what it is. What is gravitas, and can you learn it? Absolutely you can. Absolutely you can. So for us, we defined it with my program director, Sarah Rowley, whose 30 years of therapeutic practice really helped. We define it as five things. It's always three things or five things in my world, but we define it as five things. First is being really clear what your strengths are. Like, if you don't know, go and find out. There's lots and lots of data-based, evidence-based mechanics that you can use for that. We use Gallup. The second is your story that we've talked about. The third is actually, how do you hack stress? So you've got to be composed, but you also need to understand the relationship between your gut and your brain. You know, actually the biggest thinking organ in your body is not your brain, it's your gut. And so I'm a huge convert around understanding how to hack stress with sleep and nutrition and exercise and puppy dogs and lots of stuff. And then the other two components are presence. You know, how do you show up? How do you turn up? How do you make sure that you are not giving away in your nonverbal communication different messages? And then finally, resonance. And that is, why do people remember you? What is memorable about what you say? And certainly 90% of what you say, whether you're presenting in a boardroom, whether you're presenting at a leadership team meeting, or whether you're on a town hall or on a podcast, 90% of it is delivery. You don't need to worry so much about the content, because you know your stuff because you've learned your craft. We've all got opinions about things. It's the delivery that makes the difference, that builds that gravitas. And so day one, you've got the gig, you've got to be composed. Day, however many years it takes you, me 25 years later, having gravitas and practicing that and really focusing on that is hugely important. And we partnered with Dr. Louise Mahler to do that. She's a fantastic body language and communication expert, and she comes on the programs that we run. And it is life-changing to know what your body language gives are life-changing. So many women I see have these little habits, they're habits that are not helping them. You know, the wringing of the hands when they're speaking, or indeed the touching of the hair. You know, it's very, very off-putting. And if somebody hasn't told you about what you do, then how do you know? Because certain people will perceive what you're saying as not credible, or you're not composed, or you're losing an argument, or you're coming across as arrogant. It's such a simple thing to understand what your body language is. You need guidance and help to do it, but it makes a massive difference. So how do you become not just a good leader, but a great leader? You have composure. You also have cognition, so you can understand and read the room. You have great gravitas. And all of those things can be learned. You are not born with any of them. You can learn them.
This is so powerful and also so encouraging as well, because I think the world is shifted from, because when I reflect on like my school years, right, it was all about what you scored in the test. But I think as we progress in our careers, what becomes more important is our EQ, not our IQ. Yeah. And what you're sharing here, Anne, is a prime example of this. And this is what I really want to hit home to people, that these skills can be learned, they can be taught. And do not let these soft skills, aka critical skills, hold you back. This is what I think the future of leadership is going to be. Exactly this, what you're talking about today.
Yeah, absolutely.
100%.
And I think when you think about how we were socialized, and I'm obviously a bit older than you, but when I was going through education, happened to be in Birmingham, but I'm sure it's the same the world over, little girls were socialized to be kind and pretty and quiet and sociable and caring and nurturing. Little boys were socialized to be naughty and bold and brash and competitive. And so it's a fact that girls, as they come through school academically, they do better, much better than boys. So what happens? What happens is when we come out of that educational environment where we've got our tiaras, because we've done so well in our tests, straight A's, you know, brilliant results. When we come out into the work environment, it's a completely different game that we're not used to. So we have climbed the ladder in education and done very well. When we come into the work environment, the rules are completely different. So is it any surprise we feel vulnerable? We feel like imposters. This is where imposter syndrome starts. That sharp clash from school into the work environment, and I'm including uni in the school piece, that sharp clash, that really knocks the confidence of women.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy. 100%. And I can reflect on that myself, because it's been a journey for me to have to really go on and develop these skills that you're talking about, and still a work in progress. But it's really important for women, I think, to pause and reflect on that and reflect on the messaging, reflect on the programming, and start to rewire that.
Yeah.
I think that's a really important step. So let's go on to, obviously you've got an amazing business. So you left Accenture.
Yeah.
And you had this itch that you wanted to scratch. So does this lead you on to Triumph and Adversity?
Yes, it does. Don't you love the title? Triumph and Adversity. I love it. It is.
I love it.
It is a fun thing to do. And so it is all about giving frank and fearless advice. Where it counts and when it really matters. And so that is the premise of Triumph and Adversity, and that actually I think great leaders are forged in the good, the bad, and the sometimes really ugly of our working lives. And as I said before, you know, making mistakes and learning is a critical part of that. And I think we have this kind of perfectionist view. I'm definitely an anti-perfectionist. you know, an anti-perfectionist view of how we learn and how we evolve is really the premise of Triumph and Adversity. So we do executive coaching, we do leadership development, we do bespoke programs. I've run the programs for chief executive women at the senior exec level and also at the exec level. And there's about 300 women a year that go through those programs with chief executive women. We set a target, Sarah Rowley and myself, of 5,000 women in 5 years. We're about 2,800. Those programs run all over the country. The cohorts of amazing women. Honestly, it's one of the most fun things to do. But Triumph and Adversity is my baby. We have been going for about 2.5 years now. We're just about to add a couple of coaches. A very interesting individual is joining us for digital transformation. So, wow, if you're a female executive, it is a lonely gig to be at the forefront as the sponsor of a big digital transformation. So we're adding a coach who's going to specialize in that. And then in addition, somebody with therapeutic practice to really help with mindset. So we do many things. We've got our next podcast is coming out. The first one was called Driving the Equality Agenda. Our next one is coming out in August, so followed by a book. So there's lots going on with Triumph and Adversity, and it is honestly the most fun I've ever had. And I think that is because of the impact, the positive impact. I am such an impatient optimist. You know, I think anything is possible, but I see the difference that these programs create in these women, and the difference that that then has a ripple effect on society and the communities and in the business world, so that we will realize gender equality in my lifetime. You know, so I've probably got another, let's say another 10 years working. So I'm really going to cause as much trouble as I can in the next 10 years through Triumph and Adversity.
I love it. So 2,800 women you've now coached. I'm always looking for patterns. I'm always looking, okay, what is holding women back? When you are coaching these women, Anne, is there some common themes, thoughts, mindset blockers that you're seeing coming through that you've identified?
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned there's probably, let me think about this for a second. There's probably two biggies. The first is weird body language. Lots of women have weird body language. I think we've learned some really bad habits from social media. I think the adulation of the Kardashians, please don't sue me, of the Kardashians, another in the way that they use their voices and how they behave, I think that's had a really negative impact on women. I think the body language of how we present ourselves and that nonverbal communication, I think that's number one. And I see that in everything that we do. The second then, I think, is the lack of critical thinking. So, you know, there is no magical thinking. The universe does not provide. Things don't happen in threes. I mean, honestly, I think all that is nonsense. We have so many biases that run in our minds. My friend Annie McCubbin has written a book called Why Smart Women Make Dumb Decisions. And I think lots of women don't actually have the ability to critically assess what is right there in front of them. They have a confirmation bias, or they have a halo effect. And those cognitive biases really hold women back from making really good decisions. So if I could fix, and I don't believe women need to be fixed because I think everybody has the opportunity to grow, but if there were two things that I think are holding women back in today's society, I think number one, it is nonverbal communication. And number two, the ability to think critically. So many others as well, but if those were the two things that I would focus on, that's the pattern that I see across the board on everything. It's not the same for everybody, but that pattern is very clear.
When you say think critically, I think this is honestly the number one skill that actually I'm being asked for as well when I'm recruiting for companies. We want critical thinkers, Georgie. How would you define that?
Great question. I would define it as somebody who is able to look at their biases and their flaws and be able to just notice them. So let's do an example. Let's say we are recruiting through yourself for a digital transformation lead. You know, tricky to get these people in the marketplace, even trickier to find women in technology, but they are there. They are there. There's some amazing women in technology in this country. And so two CVs, both happen to be women, let's say. One of them has been to Harvard. So you and I both go, "Ooh, I've been to Harvard. That must be a..." That halo effect, you just need to notice it and say, hang on a minute, does that make them the best candidate? Not sure. And that's just a very small example of critical thinking. And I think particularly for women, being able to critically assess, how am I making this decision? Have I got a particular bias in play here? And am I able to check myself? So for me, the simple definition of critical thinking is, am I able to check my decision making?
Love it. I think that's that. I've never had it described like that before, but that was such a simple example of exactly how we can identify it when we're sort of, you know, going about our day jobs. And for me as well, it's something I'm very aware of when I'm looking through candidates, I'm looking through CVs. I'm like, why am I drawn to that person, not that person? I'm constantly just checking in. But that awareness, I think that self-awareness is another skill that comes up a lot, building up that awareness of your thoughts and things. It's absolutely crucial. But talking about businesses now and corporations, obviously, like, I'm recruiting for a lot of companies right now that say to me, "We want to hire more women, Georgie." And I ask them questions, well, like, you know, why do you want to hire more women and what's your organization like? In your opinion, Anne, so I know you've probably given some thought to this, right? Like, we don't need to fix women. We need to fix the system, right? What can corporations be doing to really set women up for success in these organizations to not only just attract them, but also retain them and make sure they have equal opportunities in these businesses as their male counterparts?
Yeah, it's my favorite topic, this one. why bother, right? So let's start with the basics. Why bother? Why are we doing this again? Why bother? It's because it is proven that more diversity at every decision-making table makes better business. It's not about the optics of hitting targets or getting balance. It's not about that. It's about better business performance. And so why wouldn't you? It's not a question of why bother. It's a question of why wouldn't you? We want to see more diversity of all types at the decision-making tables in this country, in every decision-making table, whether that's a boardroom or a leadership team or a team table. That diversity of thought will ensure that we perform better. So it's why wouldn't you? That has to be the question. And I think a lot of organizations, you know, I hear a lot about, you know, "Oh, we don't have quotas," or "I don't want to be the token female." Honestly, I'm happy to be the token female. It served me quite well in my career in the early days to be the token. I quickly and clearly made sure that I wasn't the token for long, because my objective was obviously to climb, but also to lift others. And so when you have more diversity at the table, there's this climbing and lifting, climbing and lifting, climbing and lifting. So of course, all boats then rise. That makes a big difference. And I think I was talking to Sam Mostyn, who's now our Governor General, our incoming Governor General, and she's had all sorts of roles where she was, you know, the quota, the target. And she said, actually, that opened up opportunities for me. So I think we've just got to be a little less precious about quotas and targets. If you get the opportunity, take it. But if you get the opportunity, lift someone up behind you, around you, build that capability. That diversity doesn't come one by one. It comes as a collective, but it only comes as a collective if you are willing to lift up others. And I really like that. I was talking the other day to Catherine Clark, who's the CEO of Paralympics Australia. Incredible woman. She gave me that term, that lift and climb, lift and climb. And I really like that. I like the idea of that. I'd never had that language before until I chatted to her. She's somebody you should have on this, actually. She's amazing. Catherine Clark, I'm happy to connect you, Georgie. She's another troublemaker. So, you know, I think you'll enjoy a conversation with Catherine.
Amazing. I absolutely love that as well. Lift and climb, lift and climb. So for the women in organizations now that are climbing any advice for them? Because I think that I hear this a lot, you know, like I think what women are struggling with in organization, what I'm hearing, Anne, is that women are struggling to get their voice heard. They feel like they're getting overspoken. They're struggling navigating all of the politics that come with working at some big organizations. So, I mean, even reflecting back on your time with Accenture or like, you know, coaching the women that I'm sure in these senior leadership roles, any advice to these senior women that are struggling to navigate this corporate landscape right now, that in a leadership role, they want to be lifting others up, but there's all these policies and red tape around them and they're getting frustrated.
Yeah, great, great. I actually think that the climb isn't always up. I also think the climb can be lateral. The lateral moves in your career, as you become very well-rounded in a particular organization, are great. So depending on your organization, don't think up is the only climb. Don't think up is the only way to go. If you see something that's adjacent or you see something that is particularly interesting, I'm coaching somebody at the moment, great engineer, but she needs more commercial experience. And so my coaching to her is actually, if you want to then climb to be an executive, you're going to need to round out your experience. And to do that, let's get you some commercial experience. So she went to her boss, happens to be a man, and she said, I need commercial experience. And he said, I was waiting for you to come and ask. So I said, well, okay, good. Let's get on with it. So I think my first point is the climb doesn't have to always be up. Think about the lateral moves. And I think the lateral moves gives you good levels of experience across multiple things in the organization. That is goodness. Then I think, you know, managing politics. What is politics? It's a lot of noise. It's a lot of stress. The advice I would have is pick your battles. I'm from Birmingham, so I want to be in every battle. And I suffered in Accenture. I would dive in and I'd be fighting with all sorts of people. And somebody once said to me, you know, Anne, when you do that, when you fight with pigs, you get dirty and they love it. And that was very wise words from all. And I learned, actually, I don't need to be in every fight. And I think women in particular, I think we get drawn in. If there's drama, you know, we get drawn into that. And I think, again, you've got to apply your critical brain. Do I need to be in this conversation? Is this really important for me to win this battle? Should I even be fighting this? Like, is this really important to me? If it is to my purpose and values, then fair enough. But if it isn't, get out. Get out of the pit. Get out of the fight. And picking your battles on what's important, I think, is very important for women in big organizations and small organizations. If you feel you're getting drawn into the endless battle, then there's something wrong. And if it is not aligned or important to you from a purpose perspective or from a personal values perspective, you're in the wrong fight.
That's incredible advice. That's because I think as women, we are natural kind of problem solvers. Like, we want to jump in and save the day. And actually, like you said, that's not the right approach. We don't need to be involved in everything. And it's picking our battles. That's really, really solid advice there.
Yeah.
So I was just reflecting on one conversation I had with a woman the other week, and hopefully she's listening to that now. She's going to really take something away from what you just said then, because I think that's absolutely key, because you're not going to win all the battles. So pick the right ones that you feel very passionate about and that you feel aligned to, and absolutely have your voice heard, but don't go in and try and solve everything, because you're going to be solving nothing at the end of the day. That's super powerful. I want to move on now, because you're also, you're involved in charity organizations like Fitted for Work. And I can imagine this must give you so much fulfillment, but it's also must give you insights to things that are going on in the world. So can you talk a little bit about that piece of work and how you're giving back and why Fitted for Work and organizations like this are really important, especially for women?
Yeah, I'm on the board of Fitted for Work, and it's a great example of that lift and climb. You know, our chair, Wendy Stops, invited me to apply. And initially I was like, oh, I'm too busy. And then I got to know the organization. I'm like, I have to do this. Like, there's no choice. I've got to jump in. I have to do this. It's an incredible organization. It's national. It is focused on helping women suffering disadvantage to find work. And at Fitted for Work, we believe that if you are fitted for work, you are fitted for life. It's been going almost 20 years. It's helped over 45,000 women. And the services they provide enable women to not just find work, but keep. And so this can be women that are maybe in their 60s. It can be women in their late teenage years. It can be women who are suffering domestic violence or financial abuse. It can be women who've just been released from incarceration. The breadth of women and everyone who identifies as a woman, the services and the breadth of women that are helped is extraordinary. And what is different about this organization, which is why I was so passionate about working for them, is they do everything from helping you write a CV, to finding recruitment roles, to going to the interviews, to having the tram fare to get to the interview, to deal with the knockback of not getting the first or the second or the third or the fourth or the fifth job. And then we provide a capsule wardrobe for a fortnight. So say, for example, you've just come out of incarceration, you don't have any work-ready clothes. And so the executive women, certainly the women of Melbourne, like to shop for all of Australia, as we know. And so a lot of those women donate those clothes to Fitted for Work, and those are the clothes that we create the capsule wardrobe. But the most important part of Fitted for Work is the mentoring and the advice and the support that is given to these women. It's just, I mean, I can't tell you the impact. And there are two social enterprises that are run. Fitted for Work is a charity, but it is very focused on building its own revenue streams from these social enterprises. So the first one is called The Conscious Closet. The women who donate clothing often donate the most extraordinary designer gear, handbags, shoes, stuff that they no longer wear or doesn't fit anymore. And they donate that. And we put that into The Conscious Closet, which is basically it's like the best op shop you've ever seen. And high street brands like Elk the Label, extraordinary women, Marnie the founder there, also donates collections and stock, brand new stock. Witchery, D'Souza, Sage and Claire. I mean, just extraordinary brands that are very supportive of Fitted for Work. And that makes these women who are looking for help, it gives them a confidence. Because when you feel good and you're wearing something and you're in an interview and you've had all this practice, you're going to get the job, which means you're not going to be a vulnerable person. You are going to have the dignity that comes with work. Funding and independence for you and your kids or you and your family or whoever it is, it's life-changing. And the second one is then called Supervention. So particularly at the moment with all this discussion about domestic violence, I mean, the banks see firsthand what happens with financial abuse, or they see firsthand the consequence when suddenly a credit card payment is missed or a mortgage payment is missed or everything has gone to hell. And a number of the banks basically refer those women to us at Fitted for Work, and we then find them jobs. And the reason that's important is because that woman then has an income. So she never enters hardship. She never has vulnerability, financial vulnerability, and she is able to actually be a valued customer of the bank, not a vulnerable customer of the bank. And of course, for the bank, that means their bad debt write-off is significantly reduced. So that idea of the intervention at the point when we see the financial abuse as opposed to at the end of the hardship pipeline makes a huge difference. So I love what we do for Fitted for Work. I think it is an extraordinary organization that is making a very positive impact on society. And I see that every day with the work that they do.
So powerful. And why I wanted to bring it up as well, Anne, as I was on a podcast the other day, and it was quite a scary stat to know that the women above the age of 50 are now the homeless rate is growing with women above 50. And I just, when I heard that, I thought, wow, these women have probably raised families, worked hard on their lives, and they're homeless. Some of these women, like they're on the verge of being homeless. And I just thought it's organizations like Fitted for Work that are addressing this problem in our society. And I wanted to give it space today to talk about it, because this is exactly a solution to this homeless problem that women above 50 are finding themselves in, which is absolutely heartbreaking when I heard that stat. So I wanted to for people to know that there's organizations out there making a difference in the world, which is just encouraging to hear for sure.
Yeah. It's the fastest growing cohort of homelessness in this country is those women.
Yeah, I know. And you just think, why? It's just, it's so disappointing. It's so disappointing. But it's also good to hear that there's people out there like yourself that are doing something about this. So I absolutely honor what you're doing there. But
I was just going to say, it's tax time coming up. So if you want to donate to Fitted for Work, you can go straight on their webpage and you can donate. Or if you're interested in donating clothes or indeed volunteering, then please check them out. We appreciate all the help.
Beautiful. I'll make sure that we link it below in the show notes so people can go and check out what Fitted Work is all about. I'll make sure we put that on the show notes. But look, finally, Anne, I want to talk to you about confidence, right? Because I get a lot of women say to me, Georgie, I want to be more confident. And I think that people, especially women, wait until they feel confident before they take action, before they put their hands up for that promotion, before they start a business. What's your view on confidence? How have you built yours? Do you think it holds women back? How have you built your career confidence?
Yes, it does hold us back. Do you know what it is? It is the desire to be perfect. We need to be perfect. We should look perfect, sound perfect, be perfect. We don't take risks because we're worried that people won't like us. We have to be perfect. Honestly, it's nonsense. Even if you were 50% qualified for a role, you should just go for it. See what happens. Because I tell you, men, that they don't have to be 100% confident. They do it all the time. And it's partly with how we're socialized, right? And I think men have other struggles, particularly with mental health, and that's a different podcast for a different day. But I think women, we have this desire to be perfect, and it is crippling. Stop it. And I think we endlessly are trying to fix ourselves. We don't need to be fixed. And a large part of the work we do in the coaching work that we do, both at CW and Triumph Adversity, is around strengths. Let's just work out what we are insanely great at and just do that. And so for me, in my career, I knew quite early on what my strengths were, but I invested time and effort into understanding the science of strengths. And we now use that as a basis for our work. But for me, I knew I was really good at communication. I was really good at ideation. I was very strategic. So I could do complicated things and I can ideate my way out of a paperback. Any situation. Send me to Japan straight after Fukushima. I have a million ideas of what we can do. And so once I knew they were my strengths, there was no point me spending any time on stuff that I'm never going to be good at. You're naturally talented at things. And by the age of 25 and 26, your neural pathways in your brain have evolved to the point where if you have a good experience where those are reinforced in your work experience, you have the opportunity to play to your strengths, then your career likelihood is going to be A, more enjoyable, and B, you're going to do the work that you love. Versus if you spend all your effort focusing on things you're never going to be good at. I am never going to have responsibility or discipline. Ain't happening. But what I do know is that there are other people. And so I tend to build teams with complementary strengths because I'm not going to spend my time doing stuff that I'm no good at. And I'm never going to be good at it. So I think confidence comes from, if you're having the best day ever, and you think about you, Georgia, you're having the best day ever. Why is that? It's because you're playing to your strengths. You're doing the stuff that you naturally enjoy and then are naturally good at. And if you're having a particularly shit day, that's a technical term, it's because you are forcing yourselves to do stuff you just are no good at. So confidence, I think, fundamentally comes from A, being an anti-perfectionist, and B, playing to your strengths.
Love it. And we've spoken a lot about topics on this podcast. Is there anything you think we haven't covered that you want women to know from your own experiences, life lessons, coaching practices?
I've had quite an interesting experience in the last 4 weeks. I've lost two men in my family, both in their mid-50s, both with mental health issues, one with an addiction issue. And I have been thinking about that a lot. And I've been thinking to myself, you know, we're never going to get to gender equality if we don't have male allies. We are never going to get to gender equality if we don't form relationships built on respect. We're never going to get to gender equality in any form, in any business or in the home environment, unless we seek first to understand. And I think women have a natural ability to seek first to understand. And if there was one thing I would add, it would be always think about that. Really seek first to understand genuinely with an open heart, because you'd be amazed what people will tell you. And I think as women, we are naturally capable of that sharing, of that understanding. And I think that will make all the difference. And you think about the issues we have right now with domestic violence, you know, the direct effect of men's mental health. That is what we're seeing, this incredible, horrifying situation. If we could find a way to seek first to understand, I think that would really create something that would improve the working lives and the home lives for many, many women across this country. So for me, I feel very optimistic about that. I think we have evolved as women to a point where it's not black and white. I think it is all shades of all different colours. And I think we have the ability to build a society that is based on equality. And certainly in my lifetime, I'm really looking forward to seeing that. And in this next 10 years, I am literally going to cause as much trouble as possible and help as many women and men as possible to see that come to reality. So I'm excited about it. I am excited about it. But I would offer that advice to women and men listening.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that as well. And I'm sorry for your loss. And it's a beautiful thing that you just said there. And I completely agree with you. I look back at some wonderful men that have sponsored me, that have helped me. You know, my husband being one of them. He supports me in everything I do. And without him, I wouldn't be able to do half of the things that I do. So I think it's really important to acknowledge that isn't just about women pulling each other up. It's also about men pulling women up as well. And us all working together to make this happen. So it's beautiful. Beautiful. And where can I send people to find out more about you, what you do? Where do you hang out the most?
LinkedIn is my go-to. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find the podcasts on LinkedIn. You can find the link to Triumph and Adversity on there. You can come on our programs. Chief Executive Women enrollments are open. They are super fun. You'll see on my LinkedIn loads of pictures of fun things that we've been doing. So that's probably your first point of call. But yeah, and probably, hopefully, if Georgie invites me back, I'll come and be on a panel at the Sisterhood Club. So come and see me then too.
Yes, 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 and yes, you're definitely going to be on a panel for sure. And thank you so much. It's honestly been such a joy having you on today. I've learned so much. I've got my notepad here. I've been taking notes throughout. So I just know this podcast is going to be so valuable for so many women that listen to this podcast and men as well. So thank you so much for your time today, Anne. I appreciate you and keep up the great work.
Yes. Trouble. Let's cause some trouble. Yeah, thank you, Georgie. It's absolutely delightful to talk to you as always.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that, and I can't wait to share the next episode with you. Thank you.